Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture with members of the But Why Though writing staff. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Charles.
Hello.
This week, we're going to talk about something that we don't really discuss a lot on here, which is music, and specifically, like, from soundtracks to scores. We want to talk about music in other media and how it adds to storytelling. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about the news. I'm going to start with video games here because I feel like that's the low note, and then we'll go into the good stuff with some of the Star Wars Day announcements. So the first big thing was Helldivers 2. And watching Sony just shoot itself in the foot for a whole weekend. How in the loop were you guys on this?
Yeah, no, I mean, I play a lot of Helldivers. I don't say I play a lot of Helldivers. I play Helldivers often enough where I immediately was getting messages about it from friends that I play with. And it hit me pretty crazy because I'm a pretty starch. I don't want to give Sony my money and my things if I don't have to. I'm still salty about Destiny as an Xbox player from years ago. So when you're telling me I have to create a Sony account and give Sony my data or anything regardless or whatever, it's going to be a no for me. I'd rather just go play other games because there's so many other options than to give Sony my money. And I know it's like a petty decision, but it's a decision I can make as, you know, we're all kind of like, you know, stand my ground on for that. So I'm happy they went back on it because that meant, you know, a lot of people weren't even going to be able to make that choice because all the countries listed couldn't make PSN accounts and then they just couldn't play their game. And that's just crazy to not even think about before making that decision.
Mm-hmm. Which we should say, for those of you listening at home who don't know what happened, Sony published Helldivers 2. And this has been on PC since launch, and it's on PS5, and it's been just, you can buy it, you can play it, that's all. And then they decided that you can only play it on PC if you make and register a Sony account, a PlayStation account. And then when people were like, cool, PlayStation accounts don't exist in my country, like, you're not here, Sony was like, okay, we're going to delist the game from over 100 countries.
177. To be exact.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's and so people who had already bought the game went to go to try to launch it, and it no longer functions because they don't have a PlayStation account, because they can't have it, and the game has been delisted. Steam went so far as... So Steam has an automatic refund policy of less than 2 hours of gameplay or less than 2 weeks of ownership. You know, I think both. Automatic refund. And Helldivers 2, they kind of were, from what I understand, playing pretty loose with that policy and just refunding it. The game got review bombed into oblivion. It was sitting at like 90 something percent positive reviews, and in a matter of days it was down to mixed reviews, with recent reviews all being marked as mostly negative. Like they tanked months of good reviews in just a few days.
Yeah, which, I mean, there's a whole discussion we can have about review bombing. I feel like, I mean,
in fairness, the company did say, if you're not happy, review it.
True. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff there that can go into, like, algorithms for Arrowhead for their future games, for other stuff.
And do you remember to go back and fix your review once it's been fixed?
And the other thing also, I mean, like, I feel like we can all fairly, I mean, obviously none of us know for sure, but I feel like we can fairly safely assume that it wasn't the review bombing that changed Sony's mind. It was Steam saying, we're going to refund people and now you're going to lose money.
I mean, that definitely, I think, was a bit, I think the negative reviews didn't help, because the thing that I saw a lot of people pointing out is that Sony had what a lot of people were considering a legitimate game of the year contender.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. Then they just, and then watching that go from like all positive reviews to just a
it was like watching Game of Thrones season 8. It was just because the developers for the game have been so great to this point. You know, they've made decisions like nerfs and buffs to things that are controversial, but in terms of like supporting the community since day one, they have been there. If they didn't win Game of the Year, they were probably going to win Community of the Year for sure. And then to make a decision like that was just so out of left field that it caught me completely by surprise that they would do that after such big success to that point.
The only fact that I would say that would probably that may counteract that is the fact that from what I've heard, concurrent player rates did not drop.
Oh, interesting.
Like there was a lot of complaining, but people were still playing the game, as you know. Well, doesn't really surprise.
Well, no, it was because we had until, you know, the end of the month to play is, I think, what a lot of people... I mean, because I didn't go and refund the game. I told myself I was just going to play to the end of the month. And then when I couldn't log into the game, I couldn't log into the game anymore. So I know that I played a bunch. I hadn't played in a while. That announcement happened, and then I played a bunch right away just because I didn't want to lose access to the game when Sony decided, okay, no, just kidding. We're not going to do the end of the month. We're going to do tomorrow just because... You know, Sony gonna Sony.
Yep, I would say which just such a nightmare choice. One thing I saw that was interesting was people pointing out like this is far from the first game to do this.
It isn't.
I think it might be one of the first ones to change their mind this far in, and that's the problem here.
Yeah, I mean, if Sony had come out when it launched and said you have to have a PSN account because of multiplayer, blah blah blah, whatever, most people would grumble and then do it. It's the fact that, and even though, like, my understanding is, like, on the Steam store page, it said that this would happen eventually, but it still wasn't a thing, so people got used to it. And you can never make a deal worse once it's been made. That just doesn't fly.
Yeah,
I mean, if I think that there would have been a lot of people who wouldn't have just grumbled and moaned, and I don't think the game would have been nearly as successful as it is now, not being locked into that Sony thing to begin with. And I think that they realize, we're not exclusive right now. And then they realize they captured the player base and then tried to make it exclusive, and it just blew up in their face, pretty bad. And I think it's worse because they were losing money. And I feel bad for the developers who have made a great game. But for me, it feels like I want to give the developers the benefit of the doubt and put it on Sony that it was like a greedy thing on their end and not something that the developers were this is gonna help the community a whole bunch.
Oh no, I'm like 99% sure that that's one of the official accounts on a social network from Arrowhead said that this is a Sony choice, that was Sony's call.
We
to
didn't
do.
Add this in, you know.
As the people who bankrolled it, they have a lot of pull. So, yeah, for sure. I mean, and the good thing for them also is like this has been a horrible weekend, but since Sony rolled it back,
two months from now, everything's great.
It will be forgotten.
We're playing tonight, you know, and I'm super excited about it because the game's great.
Totally. And then the other gaming news is just Microsoft is closing down three of the Bethesda studios, specifically Arkane Austin, who made Redfall, Alpha Dog Studios, who made Mighty Doom, and Tango Works, who made Hi-Fi Rush. Which, I mean, I don't know what we can say about layoffs and studio closures that we haven't already said. This has been just like a horrible constant headline that we have seen pretty regularly for what, like the last year or two, I feel like, specifically with gaming.
Yeah, but I mean, this one though, like this one has that added, and I know it's not even the first time that this has happened in this way, but it does make it a little rarer and more stand out that Tango just released an award-winning game in Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah,
so good.
You know, 4 million players on it, including the Game Pass thing. Just got released to Sony. I haven't heard sales numbers on that, but I got the impression it was expected to do well. And then worse is I want to say it was Matt Booty at Xbox who the day after the announcement came out said we need studios that can make smaller award-winning games. It's like, you mean like one you just closed? Like, oh.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Adrian, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I mean, it just sucks. Very surprising given Bethesda's success in, you know, Fallout is huge. I just really hope it's not a situation where they're trying to capitalize on Fallout being huge and throwing all the resources there. Is one of the,
I'm
the
a little,
reasons,
cause it, well,
reasons
at this point,
I saw, but I don't know.
As negative as it sounds, at this point, I feel like Bethesda makes one RPG and just reskins it. Like we have Elder Scrolls, we have Fallout, we have Starfield, and I don't know what else they do besides those three.
Yeah. So, and Hi-Fi Rush is so good. It was a game that I had just installed on Game Pass, not really knowing anything of it, thinking it was going to be like reminiscent of like Jet Set Radio or something from the original Xbox, and it was such a banger. And I think because of it mixes in the music and the culture and everything so great about games like that. So it's and I don't know, man, just why? I mean, we know why, but like, why keep doing it? And we've said that a lot too, right? You know, like, we know why you're doing it, but stop doing it.
I mean, and even setting aside all of the basic horrible reasons for the employees and gaming in general, it even makes less sense because, like, in the last couple of years, Xbox has even started trying to, you know, like, make those comments about, you know, wanting to get a bigger foothold in Japan because it has never had a place in Japan. Tango was their one Japanese studio. Yeah. The one in their catalog, and now they've shut it down. It's like, what are you doing? It's just like, it doesn't even make sense other than simply we need to drop our costs so that our next quarter we have more money because we didn't pay people. Like, that's the only way. And that's such a short-sighted concept that it's just, I can't even imagine.
It's bad.
It's baffling.
Yeah. And then just one bit of good news is that Nintendo has announced that the Switch 2 will be announced before the end of March. Which it's, we all kind of suspected it, but it's cool. It's good to see that there is something new coming down the pipeline, and that that Nintendo is, you know, recognizing that the Switch has run its course and it's time to move on.
Absolutely, yeah. I love hearing something official. There's been so many rumors going around. I love that they made a point of mentioning that it will not be present at a Nintendo Direct they're doing next month, which I hadn't heard that they were doing a Nintendo Direct. So more good news.
Yeah, that's cool.
And they also, I know it was said that, and I'm not sure if my wording is exact on it, but I'm 90% sure that they said that it was that the Switch 2 would be more like a next model for the Switch.
Okay.
I believe was the term that was used.
An iteration on it, more power.
People expecting probably more power, slightly better graphics. The thing that I'm really curious about how Nintendo is able to approach the Switch successor is that so much of the Switch's success has been coupled to that $300 price point that it sits at.
Yeah.
And is still sitting at. So if they release a more powerful Switch, is it going to be $300? Or is it going to be more than, at which point, if it's more than that, then you start running into that.
Just get a Steam Deck.
Get a Steam Deck, or, you know, I can get a Series X for less than a Switch. Like, as you start running into that, what is this? So it'll be interesting if it just comes, and then how does it look? Nintendo's fans are going to buy it regardless, but how does it look if, like, suddenly, oh, the day we announce it, it's $300 too? Well, then why is the Switch $300? What's going on? But yeah, that's the only thing that I'm really curious about, how they're going to handle and present the price point for it, because it just doesn't seem like it could be.
They're threading a needle for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, Adrian, do you want to talk to us about Star Wars Day? We burned a lot of time talking about Helldivers and Sony shooting itself in the foot.
No,
and then
no,
and then being like, never mind, we changed our mind. But you want to tell us about Star Wars?
Yeah. Star Wars Day had just passed at the time that we're recording this. And this is just my plea and my put out into the universe that there's lots of really great Star Wars stories going on in all different kinds of forms and formats, and you guys should be giving them a try. The Bad Batch Season 3 just wrapped up their series very, very recently. And then right following that, Tales of the Empire came out, with Barriss Offee and Morgan Elsbeth's kind of prequels and sequels, respectively, there. We have Jedi Acolyte, The Acolyte, coming out for the High Republic era of Star Wars. So they're going to be taking us back to, you know, 200-300 years before the events of all the Skywalker stuff.
On that, Adrian.
Yep.
What are the odds? Because, I mean, in universe, it's technically possible. Do you think that Disney's just going to shove Yoda in there to have a recognizable face?
Yeah, I mean,
because he was alive.
No, he's definitely alive. Yeah. So in the High Republic era of the continuity that's going on right now, it's primarily in books and comics, and have been going on for a few years now. And then you have the Young Jedi Adventures animated children's show on Disney Plus as well, as kind of like the only visual on-screen representation. Mm-hmm. But Yoda's there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yoda, Grandmaster Yoda's chilling. Oh, so
they're already doing it. Okay.
Yeah, so he's not shoved in your face, really. He's kind of just there, kind of in the background really a lot. He doesn't really drive too much of the plot, really, ever. But, yeah, he's there. It's kind of like the really only grounding point. But everything else is pretty new and pretty exciting. And if you went to go see the Phantom Menace, at the end, they showed a teaser trailer or a teaser of the Acolyte, and it was a fight scene with Trinity from the Matrix, and it looks amazing. It looks amazing. It looks really, really good. It looks like they have some really great people. They have great people working on it, and and then they're even going even a little bit more ridiculous, kind of leaning into the more ridiculous side of Star Wars with Lego Star Wars Rebuild the Galaxy, where they're kind of going to give Star Wars a what if, but in Lego format. With a series there in September, the big thing there is that Darth Jar Jar.
They're doing the meme.
Is doing the meme. They're doing the meme. They're doing the stuff. They did another big Fortnite collab, and then Star Wars Celebration is tickets are on sale. They're sold out for 3-day passes already. Nice. They're almost sold out their next day passes in Japan of 2025.
All right. Now, going back to the Lego thing, do we know the structure of that? Is it going to be like mini half episodes, or are we going to get like a full half hour of Darth Jar Jar?
Yeah, I think they're going to be like the mini half episodes, kind of similar to how they do the Tales of the Empire is what it's looking like, which I think works perfectly well. If you've watched Tales of the Empire or Tales of the Jedi, I think those little anthology formats or those 15-minute formats work super well. We've seen them work super well in Visions as well. So they could do 6 minutes to 15 minutes to 30 minutes, and I think that they'll probably knock it out of the park, because they're definitely leaning into the memes, and that's when Star Wars, I think, is the most fun.
Yeah. Now, do you know any other stories that they showed as like things that are coming?
Nothing's as significant as Darth Jar Jar. Everything else is kind of just like, you throw something in a hat and it's going to be there. It looks like it's going to be a little bit more fun. Nothing that's going to like shake the canon that's going to have people on the internet, shaking their monitors, except for like those people who've been holding out for Darth Jar Jar for the last, 25 years.
Yeah. We're not going to get like a what if Mace Windu is the one who found Luke and brought him to the Death Star. Yeah,
what if, Shmi Skywalker doesn't die, in episode two, I don't, nothing that too crazy, but the implication's fun, and I'm super excited about it. Just really great time to be enjoying Star Wars outside of the films until we get back in the theaters soon.
Definitely. Well, thank you for that. I didn't get a chance to pay as much attention to Star Wars Day as I wanted to, so getting that quick rundown was super helpful for me. But now it's time for the main segment to talk about music. Then this is not a typical episode for us. We're not trying to get to the root of anything, really. I think we're just trying to discuss and appreciate something that can pretty easily, I think, be taken for granted. And I don't even know that when I pitched this episode, I had any one thing in mind. I do know that we all pretty quickly agreed that X-Men 97 had brought back one of the most iconic themes of all time. And that alone kind of made this feel worth it. That's another one where I'm like, man, I gotta watch that. I haven't been watching it, but I do love that theme song and I won't skip the intro ever. So to get us kind of in the right mindset, and then I'll do a little bit of a, history lesson on contextualizing, music and media. What are your favorite like theme songs from different things?
If we're talking movies, the two that stand out to me, and I'm sure that they're probably the composer is going to come up again in this conversation, but all around encompassing it, all around, my favorite, Jurassic Park. That theme is so gorgeous, so uplifting, fantastic. But if we're going to talk about, like the theme that the opening theme that encompasses a movie, that creates a movie to an extent, you got to talk Jaws.
Ooh, like, okay. I thought you were going to say Star Wars, but man, Jaws.
Jaws is like, that is literally a Shaq attack in musical form. It's so, you hear those two just done. It's like, instantly, two notes. It's so fantastic. It is
also one of the few instances of a theme song, excuse me. It's one of the few instances of a theme song that kind of worked its way into the public consciousness to such a degree that like, go to any like pool, lake, beach, body of water, And if you hang out for like an hour, there's a good chance you will hear it at some point from someone, I feel like. Like, it's just, we, that sound and water go together for people.
Absolutely.
That's a good one. Adrian, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, we, both of those are great. And when you were describing the one that I thought was going to be Star Wars, that's, I was going to say the Star Wars main theme song. But I think that's only because it's on my mind because I saw The Phantom Menace for the first time in theaters for the first time. And I've never heard the theme hit with, yeah, it was just the experience, like everything that you were describing was like the experience I have when I watch the Star Wars movie and I hear the theme hit for the first time. So that's where I lean always. But man, the X-Men theme song, I think, might be one of my favorite in animated form. It's a no skipper for sure. I'll put it on probably just to get hyped up in the morning, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I was looking over at my movie shelf trying to think, like, well, what are some of my favorites? And one, I don't know if this is actually one of my favorites, but I was like, oh, that actually is a little, it's dated, but I think iconic, and that's Austin Powers.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good
like,
one.
You immediately hear that in your head, but it's also like, okay, but that's not really a cultural touchstone at this point.
Yeah, it's hard to beat Josh. That's the problem.
It's hard.
Because you can name only, some, but man, it's hard to beat Jaws. It's really hard to beat Jaws.
I would say is as universally instantly iconic in as Jaws, and I don't think it's necessarily because it's good, just because there was so many movies. You have to talk Bond.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He just gets so many good... Yeah. Oh, you know what? Mine's from TV, and again, not a huge cultural touchstone, but the theme song for the TV show Pushing Daisies. Beautiful, beautiful theme song, like... If you watch the show, you'll hear it. You'll love it. The show only lasted 2 seasons and was a victim of the writer's strike. But the theme song is like, oh, this is good. Like you made a genuinely very good song for this. No words to it, just all instrumental. And we'll get into that as well. But okay. Yeah. I feel like that. I feel primed to continue the conversation to you guys.
Let's go for it then.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Take us in.
Okay. So obviously scores and soundtracks, nothing new. So just a quick primer that I think will contextualize a lot of this. I'm going to focus on movies because I feel like that's kind of, it branches out from movies in my understanding of how this all flows, of like movies do this, TV does this, games do this. So we have the silent era, and at that point we have like either a live musician in the theater playing piano alongside a movie, or there's like someone throws on a record. It's not necessarily for the movie. It might not even be pre-written. It might be improvised. And then in 1927, we get The Jazz Singer, which is the first feature-length film to have synchronized music. And then from there, like we do, you know, orchestral stuff for a while and obviously musicals. And it's in, I also want to say a lot of this came from Film Independent and Sense of Cinema, as where I did my research on this. But in the 1950s, we get High Noon. And it is in High Noon as a film is in the sweet spot of they're not the first to have a theme song or anything, but they are one of the first to do it really, really well. It's not a musical. It's just a Western, but it has an original song with words. And that song, The Ballad of High Noon, Do Not Forsake Me, Darlin', wins an Academy Award in 1953. And in the next 5 years, the number of movies that have an opening credit theme song nearly doubles. Like that movie does it so well that everyone's like, we got to do it. Like we, you know, and I think by the end of the 60s, like 30% of movies have opening theme songs. And then also in the 60s, we get The Graduate, which is a movie that instead of having a score, basically just licensed a bunch of songs and commissioned, I think maybe just Mrs. Robinson. And that's sort of like where we get, you know, soundtrack. And so delineating soundtrack versus score, like original compositions versus licensed music. And from there, it kind of grows into what we currently know and recognize. But I do want to pause because I wasn't sure how to work this in. But you guys remember in the 90s when like movies would just have a rap theme song over the credits for no discernible reason?
Yes.
Like Adam's Family did this with MC Hammer. And then Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze did it with Vanilla Ice. Oh,
though God. Vanilla Ice did appear in that movie.
That's true. He is in the movie and does the turtle rap. But that was just such a weird, that was like a weird part of like movies with soundtracks and scores of like, what if we get someone to write a rap song about the Addams Family? Like the franchise that didn't need it, but I love it. Like it was great.
Yeah, for sure.
With that educational crash course kind of out of the way, I did want to ask for you guys, what as of late has kind of had your ear? Like, what have you been taking notice of in the media that you're consuming and its use of music?
Yeah, I think for me, Fallout, I don't think I've played anything other than like the Fallout playlist in my house for a couple of weeks now because of the Fallout TV series. So for me, it's definitely Fallout. And it's just the same songs over and over again, man. But I just don't get tired of them. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they sprinkled in their use of these songs. But if I'm listening to it, if I'm watching my wife play who listens to the music, it's in my ear almost 24/7 lately. It's either that or like the Kendrick disses, because that's the only other thing on my timeline as well.
I think for me, it's been, in terms of soundtracks, I've actually been listening mostly to the soundtrack for Death Stranding, which I don't know, I don't know if either of you guys played that, but it most honestly, 90% of it is this band Low Roar that unfortunately is wrapping up their last album because the lead singer passed away, I think 2 years ago. But he had recorded enough that they were like, we can finish it. So we're going to finish it. But it's just this like mix of like acoustic and electronic music, kind of like all overlapping, very ambient, very beautiful words. But that's one that I was just like, as soon as I started playing that game, I was like, oh yeah, this is good. And then I went and just downloaded the album and have been listening to it pretty regularly. But for newer things, I think Fallout is like the one where, in terms of like watching something and picking up on the music on top of everything else that's going on, Fallout is also my example.
For me, you know, as always, I have to bring it back to anime. The soundtrack of my life since it came out last month has definitely been the Frieren Beyond Journey's End soundtrack. 70 instrumental tracks of, oh my God, this is so good.
70?
70 tracks.
Nice. Yeah,
it's gorgeous. It's got just like melodic, like peaceful, we're traveling across the countryside music. It has some of the most epic fight tracks, all just orchestral. It's composed by Evan Call, who, if you're familiar with the series Violet Evergarden, he did that one as well.
Okay.
And it sounds so good. There's three different lyrical tracks as well. Two intros, one done by Yasobi, who's pretty popular, did Idol for anime last year, and Millette does the other two. Gorgeous songs, just like, yeah, they have been on constant mix on my phone when I'm at work. When I don't have a podcast going, I'm listening to music. I've had to like conscientiously make myself listen, because there are times where I'm like, I want to listen to this, but I also would like to hear something else, so I'm going to make myself listen to something
else. Yeah, I've definitely had that where I'm like, I need to put this down just for like one album and listen to something else.
And I will say, you know, like, if you ever doubt the impact of music, like, it has never been clearer for me than with this soundtrack, because while the animation's gorgeous, love the voice work, cannot recommend that anime in whole enough. Mm-hmm. After watching the anime, I started getting the manga, and reading that manga, like, as I'm going through it, I can hear the music that would be playing if I was watching the anime, and part of me is just like, oh, I just want to watch the anime. I just want to hear definitely. It as well. It adds so much. And I've done others, like I read My Hero as well as watch it. And I'm six of one, half of the dozen of the other there, even though good music there too. But like everything that's added in Frieren is like, oh, this manga is good, but God, I want to have that music running at the same time. It's so good.
And I think, I mean, that's kind of when music is used at its best, is when it just so, it's not something that is there for filler noise. It is something that is truly creating the tone. And I think for me, that's something that's been really interesting with Fallout, because it does set the tone of the show, and it blends in perfectly with the world of the show. But then it also does this thing where it recontextualizes some of the songs. I think the big one being I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire. I think it's in the trailer and maybe episode 2. And that song is not about nuclear war, but like as soon as you put that song in the context of Fallout, you're like, oh no, this hits different. It's just a good, powerful example of like how you can leverage that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think the other thing that's been fun with Fallout, and Adrian, you might be able to speak to this, is I think that that one is also just kind of like exposing people to a style of music that they probably wouldn't choose on their own.
Yeah, yeah, it really speaks to the decision to take that route, because they could have made any kind of music for Fallout, and we could have taken it that way. But I mean, because even just the ambient music in Fallout is great. There are plenty of times where I'm playing Fallout 76 and I'm just listening to the ambient sound of the music that the game provides for you. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a good handle of that mixture of knowing what can work and really pushing the boundaries of that, like you mentioned. And the recontextualizing of are so great, because at some point, I mean, I think when I'm playing it initially, when I'm younger, especially for Fallout 3, I thought they just like made these songs up. Then to know that these were licensed songs, then you kind of just go down that rabbit hole of getting into that. Mm-hmm. And now Peggy Lee is one of my most played on my playlist every year. Yeah. Because I just love her music. It's just so good. So it's a really great avenue to go past the games into the actual music in a pretty stellar way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have at this point listened to the entire discography of Low Roar. They have five albums that are all, I think, at least an hour long. And I was like, yep, I'm going to listen to all of this because I love what they did on Death Stranding. And apparently, even the way that they ended up in there was that Kojima found their CD at like a record store in Iceland and was like, I really like this. And then eventually was like, you're going to be most of the soundtrack to my next game.
Wow.
I just wanted to add, while we were talking about that, and you mentioned, music being at its best when it's enhancing a moment and not just like filling or whatever, made me think, if there's anyone out there who actually who doesn't fully appreciate what we're talking about when we talk about how music enhances visuals, and you want to have the best experience you can experiencing what exactly that is, and it'll take you less than 5 minutes, and I know Adrian will love this suggestion. Go on YouTube and just search League of Legends cinematics. Any of those, Awaken, mm-hmm. Still Here, the way they use music to those, like, oh my god. I mean, it's only a 5 minute video, so you can but you can tell that they have that song pick before they even start storyboarding, and it mm-hmm. all flows so perfectly.
Yeah, man, they do such great work with music, man. And then if you want one up from that, go watch Arcane, because they also use music beautifully in Arcane.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Do you guys have other examples of just like things, I mean, just times where like a soundtrack or a score was used effectively? I think one that comes to mind, again, to like, make the argument for it, is knowing that the shower scene in Psycho originally wasn't supposed to have music. And it is now one of the most like known, like those orchestral stings, like that, like, you've probably made fun of it with a friend, like, but that scene was supposed to be quiet. And then the composer was like, no, trust me, we're going to try this. And it works and it sells it. And it adds so much to that scene that I think wouldn't be there if it was dead quiet.
I'm trying to think of something.
I got it.
Go for it.
Hit me.
The intro song when Blade shows up in the first Blade, that club scene.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine that song with any other music other than like that. I don't know what kind of techno music that is, but like that techno beat. To me, I don't know why I do it, but I associate basically all techno music to that opening scene of Blade. So whenever I'm at a festival, I'm thinking there's going to be a vampire showing up somewhere. Because of that opening scene.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. I have a very different one, and it pains me. I don't know if I'm the only person on this podcast old enough to fully appreciate this, but I'm going to go video games and say that a fundamental thing that I think makes this game as good and as famous as it ends up becoming is pushing stat on Super Mario Brothers and hearing that main theme that da-na-na-na-na-na. Boom. There's so such an energy. Like, you're just like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but I'm already having fun. Like, it's so great. It just...
Ooh, okay, yeah. I understand what you mean. Because to me, that's why I'll never let anyone discredit the original GameCube. Because of the GameCube, for the same reasons. Because of that do-do-do-do-do. And then when it drops, I knew as a kid when that thing was going on, this little box was about to bring me so much joy. And I know that a lot of my friends felt like that because we would make the noise all the time. So yeah. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think honestly, the Mario theme song is just it's such an interesting one. There is a podcast called Strong Songs. And he did like, I think it was like a half hour breakdown of the music theory behind that song. And so if you want to have an even deeper appreciation for it, go look that up. I thought you were going to say something like the way that like Final Fantasy uses leitmotif to have like, you know, you hear this song and you know that character's coming or, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, oh my God. Well, I mean, you can have an entire episode just about talking about, Yui Matsu's work on Final Fantasy. I mean, oh my God. I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All of those pieces are so great. I mean, yeah. I mean, just the... Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I don't even... Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, a similar example, though, to what I said, that, like, the intro theme to Final Fantasy VIII, Liberi Fatali, has, like, just, like, this, like, very cool, and then it just rises with power, and the visuals that come along, because it has, like, it's interspersed all kinds of little pieces of cutscene from the game, from throughout the game with the opening sequence. And you're just like, I remember watching that when I downloaded a demo for the game to try it out before I bought it, because I wasn't sure if my system could run it. And I remember getting through that and being like, I'm buying this game. I have to know what I just saw. Like, there's no way about it. Oh, yeah, the music like that is so good. So great.
Oh, you know, okay. Not to make this just like a episode where we just talk about cool things that we've seen with music, but this might actually be one of my favorite ones. And it's one of the few video game soundtrack or video game scores that I've purchased, is Outer Wilds. So great music throughout. Let me find that artist's name. I want to make sure that I credit him. It is Andrew Prallo. And there's this thing in the game where the whole game is just you exploring your galaxy, and you can find other explorers from your team, and each one of them that you find is playing an instrument. Like one of them has like a little drum or a harmonica or a banjo. And there's a thing that you can do in the game where if you rocket yourself out and away from, well, so you have a scanner where you can scan planets to like find frequencies. And if you rocket yourself away from the galaxy far enough and you can line up all of their signals and aim the scanner at them, you'll hear a song, because each of them is actually, while they're playing their own song on their own, it all overlaps into one bigger song. Like, they're really only playing pieces of it. And for a game that like one of the main themes of it is that like, despite the vastness of everything, we're all still connected, having you rocket yourself into deep space to listen to your friends play music together is like, oh yeah, this is really cool. And the game never tells you to do that. You have to decide that you're going to see if it would work. But then you're rewarded with that, where you're like, I'm not going to stop the universe from imploding because I'm doing this instead, but like, it's going to be really cool. And it's also a great song. It's, you know, space banjo. But yeah, I love it. It's one of the most effective ways, because at that point you're getting the vibe of the game. You're getting this cool little Easter egg. You're getting to listen to this, you know, beautiful song. And you're also driving the themes of the game. Like, you're reinforcing what the game is trying to tell you on an intellectual level with music. And that is probably, I think, one of the coolest things I've seen someone do with music in a video game.
Absolutely. That does sound awesome. You had me confused for a second when you started that. As I feel like much of the video game
space Outer Worlds.
Says, you said Outer Worlds. I'm like, I don't remember Outer Worlds having bad music, but
it is. As someone who is a gigantic fan of Outer Wilds and could not get into Outer Worlds, it is the most frustrating name confusion.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy.
Because I'm like, hey guys, there's this phenomenal indie game that like will make you reevaluate everything. But people are like, oh, you mean that weird Bethesda game? And it's like, no, I'm Obsidian. All for the anti-capitalist Bethesda game, or Obsidian. Yeah. Like, I'm all for this, like, you know, anti-capitalist filled game, but it's not the one that I'm talking about. But yeah, I think that's another one. And this is all kind of, I think, reinforcing the overall thesis of this episode of music does really cool things with storytelling. But I did want to talk about one thing that I don't know how I haven't watched it super recently, but I think you guys will have opinions on this. And I want to talk about Cowboy Bebop, because I feel like that one doesn't necessarily rely on anything other than the fact that it's cool as hell and it was doing something different from other anime when it came out.
Oh, I'm always, always happy to talk about Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah. Talk to me about the music of Cowboy Bebop, because it's beautiful.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, even beyond a tank and the Real Folk Blues, I mean, you want to talk about intro and outro that just nail it. I think the phenomenal thing, the thing that makes Cowboy Bebop musically stand out so great is a part of what makes the show in general stand out, which is the fact that every episode is so different. You have so many different themes, and while like obviously bebop and jazz and that sphere is the most prevalent, you have Heavy Metal Queen where they have heavy metal music. You have all of these different things, and they're woven together to work so well. They never try to do any weird like bouncing in between or step on each other's toes. They craft stories that work so well, and yeah, that, and like you said, it's just cool as hell. Everything about that, about having Spike and Faye and Jet. I mean, even like when like, I mean, like my personal, one of my personal favorite moments in that entire show is during Ganymede Elegy, when Jet's found out that his ex-girlfriend's fiance is their bounty target, and he's chasing after them. And you know, they could have done some sort of high pounding music, but they just have that look. It's so funny because everyone's always like, "Is that Seal?" Because it sounds like the little like ba 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 from like Kiss from a Rose, even though it's not. But it has that like, and just this like sad like he's gonna do this because he's a bounty hunter, and you know, and it's just it's so great. It captures so much and is not afraid to go against what you would expect.
Oh, yeah, which is excellent. Yeah, it's just one of those ones where I was like, I don't know that I remember a lot of specific moments of Cowboy Bebop where it was like, that was the perfect time to cue that song. I just remember that I loved all of it. Like, watch it. Cowboy Bebop to me is almost a visual album because it's just like the music is that good. There was, I was reminded while you were talking of harddrive.net, the video game satire site, did an article that was like, man suffers through a half hour of jazz before realizing he only likes Cowboy Bebop. And I'm sure that's an adventure many people have gone on. But yeah, Cowboy Bebop just has this absolutely killer score of really fun and engaging music that like you want to watch the show because you like the show, but you also want to watch the show for the music.
Oh, absolutely. And there are moments where like there are like some great, very particular drops, like I don't know what the song is called, but like there's the moment in The Ballad of Fallen Angels, the first episode with Vicious, when Spike gets punted out the window and it starts playing. I don't know what, my brain always wants it to be Frère Jacques, but it's not that. But it has that sort of like, and it's in French, so my brain just goes there because it's the only French song I know. But it just has that like, da da na 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 na. It's like, and it's so peaceful as the hand grenades rolling between Vicious's feet. It's just like, it's so perfect. It's like, what is, how? I would love to find out what made someone say, we should put this peaceful little, sounds like a children's song in this moment as Spike looks like he's about to die and Vicious might die. And it's just, it's so great. It's so creative and so well done.
Definitely. Adrian, are you, you're a Cowboy Bebop person, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of the same reasons, I think it's like kind of like indescribable. I think a lot of what Charles described is what I would describe as, it's just a vibe, man. It hits the right vibe and it knows what it is. And I think that's why like Fallout works. It works the same way, which is why I can see people going from Fallout to go listening to like 50s and 40s music and being like, oh, wait, I don't really like this music. This music kind of sucks. I kind of just like listening to it while I play Fallout to immerse me in.
I kind of like the curated selection Fallout gave me.
And then even the way that they used it in the series itself, like they laid in the music sometimes subtly and then sometimes very overtly throwing it there in your face. And I think just understanding the vibes is the same way it feels in Cowboy Bebop when you're watching. I think when you describe something as a visual album, that I think shows you what kind of like echelon that music is in when you don't even really watch it for the what's on screen, but for just how good the music is.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I think that it takes a lot for me to be like, I'm going to seek out the music from this thing independent of the thing.
Yeah.
And that goes for scores and for soundtracks, because you have to have like a tight soundtrack, a very curated selection for me to be like, I want to listen to this on repeat, regardless of if I'm watching the movie.
Yeah.
I think one actually that was a good, not recent example, because it's 10 years old, apparently, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Which, first of all, let that sink curated. In. That movie is 10 years old.
Yeah. Stop.
But yeah, just that it was like, oh, this is actually like a great selection of songs from this era, and it flows very smoothly and it's enjoyable. And I think the other thing, not with that one, but with other soundtracks, is when it manages to kind of tell the story of the movie anyway, even if you're not watching it, like when you remember all those beats and have those associations. Yeah, man, this is just making me appreciate music, which I've been on a big music kick lately, but just going through this and thinking about it out loud, that there's just so much that you can leverage and so much that you can do. I think another one, and I think all of us are the right age to appreciate this, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Yeah, of course.
Like, if you want something that's just a vibe for music, like, that. I was actually surprised when they put out the remakes and they were like, we're adding music to the soundtrack, and I thought, that's not going to be good. And they actually crushed it. Like, everything they added in, I think, evolves it and grows it and keeps it as a good album and a fun one to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't even a skater boy. And I got into punk rock music because of Tony Hawk Pro Skater and its genre. You know, that's one of those ones where I went into it and I was like, oh, okay, no, yeah, I do like this. Like, this is the vibe that hits when I need it to hit. It's not something that I'm going to listen to all the time, just like I'm not going to put on Tony Hawk Pro Skater all the time, but when you need the vibes, that's definitely there for it. Curated list.
For sure.
Curated list. I think that's such a big thing, because, I mean, we're all old enough to know what it's like to burn CDs and give CDs to friends, and I think that in itself is curating a list to give to somebody, and maybe that's why these kind of hit so hard, I think, for the age group, at least for me anyway.
Yeah, well, I think it's just that a good soundtrack plays like a mixtape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if it has flow to it, it makes sense. There's nothing like super jarring that you're like, why is this on here?
Yeah.
Although I think sometimes when they do the official release of a soundtrack, they will leave out the songs that break the flow. But I can get that, where it's like, yeah, if we put every single song we use because there was 10 seconds of that playing in the background, this is going to be too much. And also, you know, there's licensing. I think that's the other thing that complicates. Ooh. Like, I do enjoy a good soundtrack, but for video games especially, that complicates things. Like licensing. Did you guys watch, and this is, I'm probably alone on this, I haven't even watched that much of it. Did you watch The State on MTV?
No.
So The State was like a sketch comedy show that MTV had in the 90s. Super fun. They released it on DVD though, and like couldn't get any of the licensing for the music, which made some people who watched it realize like how crucial the music was to the vibe and the tone of the show. Not that it like ruins it necessarily, but like it's not the same when you're listening to like filler studio owned music versus there was supposed to be a Pearl Jam song here or whatever.
Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, I mean, or like this. I mean, and there's also always like those soundtracks that, and since we're going way back today, where like you watch a movie and the soundtrack seems really great, and then you either watch the movie again and you're not as focused on the movie, so you're listening a little closer, or you just pick up the soundtrack and you listen to it, and you have that moment of like, wait, why was this song in this movie? Like the one that always jumps to me, because I was like in my teens then, the little emo boy, the old Daredevil, the OG Daredevil movie with the Evanescence music.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah,
and it was like, oh, you know, like Bring Me to Life was such a banger. And then like you listen, it was like, wait, why was Bring Me to Life in Daredevil again?
Because everything was just everything was just one of those, you know, one of those anime videos on YouTube. That's just the lens we saw everything in during that time
absolutely.
Period.
I that reminds me, one of my favorite stories. This didn't happen to me. This happened to my friend Byron. When he was a kid, he had a laser tag birthday party, and they were like, pick whatever music that you want to play at this laser tag thing. And he was like, you have the Top Gun soundtrack? Let's do that. What he as a child didn't realize is that the Top Gun soundtrack is Danger Zone and ballads. So it was just like, let's play laser tag to like love ballads. Like, because Danger Zone is not that long of a song.
Well, I think that's why like Black Panther works so well, because you can throw on the Black Panther album.
Ooh, yep.
And that's an album right there. You're good. You don't even, that's independent of the movie, but in the movie.
I mean, they sold the vinyl at Target. Yeah. Like, hey, yeah, come listen to this.
That's how you do it.
Same with Spider-Verse. Into the Spider-Verse.
Also Into the Spider-Verse.
Another really phenomenal one.
Taking the music first. Underrated one for me, I think, is Always Be My Maybe on Netflix. Did you guys see that one?
I watched that show. I don't know that I paid attention to the soundtrack, but tell me more.
Well, yeah.
Because now I'm going to have to go look this up.
With Ali Wong and Randall Park, where Randall Park plays... a 30-some in San Francisco who still plays in a band.
Oh, wait, yes. No, I did. Yeah. I did. Yeah. It was his, is it Hello Peril?
Yeah,
that
Hello
was his
Peril.
Band name.
Yeah, their band's Hello Peril. And they came out, like, they released the soundtrack for it. And it you can go listen to it on all streaming services. And it's just pretty good.
I think I bought that soundtrack.
Yeah, because that's definitely...
I'm realizing now, because I got it for those songs.
Yeah, exactly.
For the Hello Peril songs.
That's one of those ones where you literally can listen to it from the start to the finish and you basically watch the movie, because the songs are basically the movie. So it works out so well. And it's an interesting way to like put the music first and then let that tell the story. Because I can't think of other examples where I went from a Netflix show to my phone to see what the soundtrack was.
And I mean, again, that's what good use of music does, is it makes people like interrupt what they're doing because they need to know more now. Just as we kind of wrap up here, I had kind of two more questions, and we've a lot of this has just been kind of gushing, and so this might not be the most productive thing. But do you have, other than the stuff that we've mentioned, do you have like a favorite score or soundtrack that you go to?
I mean, my favorite soundtrack, I would say between all of the medium that I do, would have to be Nier Automata. That music in it is independently just gorgeous. Okabe composes a phenomenal score that has a huge range and variety of tones. And it is so integral to the theme, because that game is extremely heavy in the theming more than the narrative. There is a narrative, of course, but you play it for the characters and the theme. And that music is so integral to the way that those themes are presented that it is one of those ones that, you know, I hear Vague Hope and I'm seeing the ending of the first half of the game. I hear Bipolar Nightmare and 9S and A2 are independently going up the tower, fighting things, and everything's going nuts. And it's so well, it always brings me back into that world, which is one of those worlds that if I could just have that game running without me actively playing it, I would have all the time. It's why I love that they got the first half of the anime out and the second half's coming out this year. And hopefully I'll be able to just toss that onto the TV and just have that world playing whenever I want it and not have to actively engage, because it has so much emotion.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a little bit left field here, because I'm thinking about like what kind of soundtracks I have playing in the background that are related to the things we're talking about. And I do a lot of lo-fi, insert whatever. So I do a lot of Star Wars lo-fi when I'm gaming, or if I'm cleaning, or if I'm doing something that I just need to like be focused on something specific. It helps me a lot to focus. So it just really depends on kind of what mood I'm in. So if it's Star Wars, I'll listen to Star Wars lo-fi, or Lord of the Rings lo-fi. There's Avatar, The Last Airbender lo-fi, where, you know, they mix in Uncle Iroh talking to me during, you know, Leaves from the Vine. So like, there's just like a whole...
I assumed it was going to be Secret Tunnel. It's where my mind went.
They mix it in there too, you know? I think it's just like a different way to engage like with like the songs without... just having, you know, big orchestral stuff kind of thrown at me for a lot. So I think it's like an underrated way to enjoy the things you like with a little bit of a twist that kind of hits that more relaxing feel for me.
Definitely. I think for me, I tend to go for soundtracks over scores. I think just because sometimes for me, soundtracks are like, oh, how long is this song or how short was that song? And it just like pivots too much or too little for me. So I do go for soundtracks a lot. But I think, like I talked about Outer Wilds, talked about Death Stranding. One that I feel dumb that I didn't bring this up when I looked at my movie shelf. I'm going to read you song titles and I want you to stop me when you know what movie I'm talking about.
Ooh, okay, okay.
We Will Rock You by Queen, Lowrider, Taking Care of Business, Golden Years, Crazy on You, Further On Up the Road, Get Ready, I Want to Take You Higher, The Boys Are Back in Town, One of Your Own, We Are the Champions, Pieces, and I Conqueror.
I feel like I know so many of those songs that when you tell me, exactly. I'll be like, oh, of course.
Because this is, here's the hint. This is something that actually, it does the opposite of Fallout. It does not use the songs to build up the world. It uses the songs to disrupt the world. This is the soundtrack to A Knight's Tale.
Oh, dude. I just watched A Knight's Tale too because it was on Hulu. Like,
We have Queen, we have Bach and Turner Overdrive, we have David Bowie, we have Eric Clapton, we have Thin Lizzy. Like, that's like that. That is a great one for me. I don't know that I listen to the soundtrack itself that often, but in the context of the movie, it's like you're doing something completely off the wall, and I love it. I'm here for it. But yeah, I think that kind of for me covers it. I did want to ask just on a very very closing note: do you consider yourself a music person?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider myself a music person because I can't create music. Because I have a lot of musical people in my life who are really, 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 really talented, like musicians. And I would consider them music people because they can hear things, they can produce things. I can listen to music. Am I a music listening to person? Heck yeah, I love listening to music. But I wouldn't consider myself to know what stanza or those things. And I think that's what I would classify as like a music person.
Okay. You're not going to be like a weird guy who goes and has like a $10,000 stereo setup and is like, you really need to listen
to this. Exactly. Give me my Bose speakers. I'm good. But if you need me to break down like the Kendrick beef, let me know. Cause you know, that's poetry. It's different.
I guess I would say, yes, I am a music person in that. Like when music is presented to me in a way that is gripping and engaging, I love it. You know, like I try to, whenever great music is in something I'm reviewing, be it a video game, a movie, a TV show, I'm going to comment on it. Or if I'm watching something, like I watched an anime at one point where like it felt like whoever designed their soundtrack was just throwing music at the wall to see what stuck. And it was like, why are you doing this? But that being said, like I love the music that I discover, like if I find a soundtrack or if I find a song, but like, I don't know who the big artists are. There's nothing that I keep up with in the music scene. So that's why it's like, it's a little weird.
Gotcha.
But when I find music I love, I am passionate about it.
Yeah. I would say I appreciate music. I appreciate like the art of music. I appreciate people paying homage to different composers. And not to bring it back to Star Wars like from earlier, but thinking about how Kiner music creates kind of his own sound, but his own sound is used in Ludwig's versions of things, which is also influenced by John Williams' versions of things, and they all kind of like play together in these, you know, like beautiful like motifs. Mm-hmm. I love that. That for me is some of the best uses of music that I can think of.
All right. Yeah. And yeah, I think I do consider myself a music person. I'm not good at it, but I do try making it. But I just also really like listening to it and kind of absorbing it and finding new things to appreciate about it using like good headphones or like, you know, just decent headphones. I'm not going to, I refuse to engage with the audiophile aspect of listening to music personally. But yeah, I do consider myself a music person, but I guess for me, what's interesting with that question is that we all feel like we have different levels of appreciation, but I feel like we all came at this with the exact same enthusiasm as far as being excited about this topic. And I think that maybe more than anything that we said speaks to the importance of music in media and just as an art form in general. I don't know, just something that I was kind of curious about.
No, yeah, I mean, for sure. And I'm sure that there's plenty of people who were like, you didn't even talk about this one. We didn't even talk about Halo. So there's just so many things in this discussion that could be that we didn't even get to touch on.
I didn't even bring up that thing you do. What is wrong with me? You do actually has a great soundtrack and one of the most effective uses of the same song, where it's the whole thing of the movie is that they're a one-hit wonder, and by the end of the movie you kind of hate the song too because there's like 12 other songs throughout the movie, like probably more, but that's the one that you hear the most.
If you want to talk, media that uses music you wouldn't expect it to in a weird way, kind of like with the Knight's Tale, the fact that the single piece of music that's most connected to Gears of War is Mad World. After the trailer, and then it just shows up, in like the first three games, it pops up here and there, and it's just like, why do I associate this game with a game that has a chainsaw bayonet? But it works, and it's in the world, and it just makes so much sense. So
for sure, amazing. Yeah. Well, I think that does it for this week. But before we go, do you have any articles or music that you would like to plug?
I just today on the, well, I guess a couple of days ago now on the site, I reviewed a game, Animal Well, a gorgeous pixel art 2D Metroidvania that definitely drives a vision that a lot of people will jive with, but is also very uncompromising. So if you're someone who loves games that go for what they're trying to do and don't try to sanitize the approach, you should definitely check it out, or at least give my article a read on the site.
Yeah, that's super great. That makes me super excited to go read your review. I'm a big fan of Video Game Donkey and all the things he does. So I know that this is one of one of the big titles, right? Since his his video game company, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, familiar with that.
Oh yeah. So no. I mean, then that just speaks to like how good the game is, right? So you have no idea who Video Game Donkey is, and I think that speaks to how great the game is. No. That's awesome. We can talk about it offline if you want, Charles. But yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Super excited to play that for sure. For me, Star Wars just finished, and the only thing that I'm really reviewing right now is not stuff that I'm super liking. Star Trek Discovery is not great. Bodkin on Netflix is not great. I recommend going to check out Charles's review of Animal Well, because I'm gonna go check it out right after this.
All right. I think I am going to recommend things that I've had on heavy rotation. Japanese Breakfast 2021 album, Jubilee, really, really good. And I've also been listening to 2014, another 10-year-old thing, Gerard Way's solo album, Hesitant Alien. If you like shoegaze, Britpop, any of that stuff, like that album will probably check some boxes for you. And to keep it on soundtracks, really go listen to the Outer Wild soundtrack. It is fantastic. And thank you guys for your recommendations. And yeah, Charles, I'm going to go check out that review as well, because I, like Adrian, I'm a fan of Video Game Donkey. I feel like he's done some great stuff. I'm excited to see his publisher's first game. And for you listening at home, if you have liked what you have heard here, and if you want more of it, you're in luck, because we're basically everywhere. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. When I say us, I mean, but why though? And you can find us on YouTube, Twitch. We have a Discord. You can like, comment, subscribe, retweet, review, just whatever engagement you want to throw our way online. Please do come find us. Come talk to us. We would love to hear from you. And if you want to, you can also find our Patreon, kick us a few bucks, helps us to keep the show going. It helps us to keep us making the content that you love. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter at most always Alex. Charles, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Gatsu083.
And Adrian?
Yeah, but you can find me mostly now on Instagram and TikTok at SuperEase93. I'm building a record cosplay that I'm documenting, so that's mostly where I'm at these days.
Nice. All right, well, thank you guys so much for joining me, and thank you at home for listening, and we'll see you next time.